Hello, bienvenue, welcome, and thank you for joining us here at AIPT Comics Podcast, Adventures in Pod Taste. You're about to go on a sonic safari through the world of nerdery with me, your host, Jason. Hi, how you doing? My lovely co-host, Dave. Say hi, Dave.
What's going on, everyone?
And joining us again is, you know what, I forget what your title actually is, David. is the guy who sends us comics every week. It is David Brooks. Say hi, David.
Hi, it's content and media manager.
There you go. Yeah,
we're very you should know that. I'm your manager.
I know. I listed you as my direct reporting editor when I got my press credentials for C2E2.
Dave is the one that beats us up when we're not always on time with things.
Yeah, don't bring that up. Don't bring that up. I still have three trades out. And now I just took on the new issue of Wildstorm, too. So it's going to be a writing weekend, which I don't have a lot.
It's going to be a wild weekend is what it's going
to
be.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a storm. No, you know what? I'm not going to continue it. That's a lame joke even for me. So how are you guys doing today? How's life? How's the comics game?
It's good.
Yeah, not bad.
It's a good
bad.
Time to be reading comics, I think. A lot of good artists out there.
Okay. If you then, you know, we've talked about this a bunch on Slack. Do you think that there are actually good artists, or do you think that there's just a lot of people trying to prove themselves? Because I feel like one of the big comments that's been going through, especially from guys like Dog, is that artists don't sell a book. They're not what draws someone to it anymore. And I remember, especially the 90s, guys like Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Joe Madureira could launch a book based off of name recognition alone, and like it didn't matter who was writing it. Nowadays, I can't really think of too many people who kind of check that box.
Yeah, for the general public, I think you're right. I think, but someone like you or me who reads a lot of comics, we have our favorites, right? But besides like Jim Lee, I don't think most people know who these people are.
Well, I mean, Todd McFarlane maybe is big enough that people will know him. I think Rob Liefeld maybe has, although for dubious reasons, I feel like he's gotten pretty prominently known. But I think that most of that is due to the, I guess you'd call it pushback on how ridiculous most of his artwork is and his abhorrence to drawing feet.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I really wish I remembered who wrote that blog, but there was that one blog that just like showed like the 100 unforgivable art mistakes of Rob Liefeld. And it was pretty fantastic. And then he did a sequel, which is like 50 more unforgivable mistakes. But speaking of unforgivable mistakes, we today are going to be talking a little bit about not necessarily mistakes, but just... let's call them missed opportunities. Comics obviously is a pretty broad spectrum. There's a ton of content out there. There are millions of things that you could be reading at any given moment. But there are big names and legacy characters and like tentpole figures that are supposedly super popular, super prominent. You see them everywhere, but maybe you just didn't get into them. Just a lot of hullabaloo, much ado about nothing, I guess you could say. Yeah, I'm busting out my old-timey thesaurus for this
episode. Nice. No, it's good.
But this all comes courtesy of, again, a conversation on Slack. Maybe we should just publicize the Slack channel. It's a lot more entertaining than we tend to be. But Venom has a whole new series of events. I think it's like the third or fourth event in a row for Venom. He's got a new movie coming out with Tom Hardy. He's got like five or six different clones. There's like anti-Venom, and then there's friggin' Carnage. And I think at least two out of three of us, maybe all three of us, just don't get the appeal of Venom. Dave, how do you feel about Venom? You're the one that I'm not 100% certain on.
Because I'm really not 100% certain on Venom either. I mean, I've never been a big Spider-Man reader, so my knowledge of Venom is very, slim. So I did pick up the Venomverse comics. That came out in the fall, or was it last summer?
Around there. Give or take, yeah.
Yeah, so I've got them. I haven't sat down to read them yet, and now I know the new series is coming out, and I think it's going to it plays off the other one, right? It's a continuation. Yep. It's going to finish it up. Yeah. So
yeah,
I need to sit down and read more about Venom other than him just being the bad guy. The most I'm familiar with him is when he was with the Guardians of the Galaxy on that.
Well, that wasn't even Eddie Brock. That was when it was Flash Thompson. He was Agent Venom. Yeah. I guess that's another thing that I think makes Venom one of those characters that's kind of hard to get into is that he's got a pretty diverse and complex lore. Like, there's a lot of history involved with Venom. He's been in multiple people. So the concept of Spider-Man's own neuroses coming back to be his biggest villain, I think, is kind of neat conceptually. But once they tried to make him his own character and carry his own book and have his own stories, it just sort of dragged. And it seemed like such lazy writing, too. It seemed like he was a character who exists because he looked cool and that was it. Like, they bulked him up to ridiculous levels. He seemed to get away from being a guy covered in a suit. And, like, he got the big monster mouth and the giant tongue. And he was eating brains. And just, like, he was goop. That was it. And that always seemed dumb to me. And then, like, with DeviantArt and whatever fan communities might also be, like, putting out their own, unsolicited artwork of the character, they venomized everything. I feel like everybody for a while, their tag on whatever web post that or blog or whatever that they were posting was like a venomized Wolverine. Oh no, it's a venomized T-Rex. Oh my God, what are you gonna do? I'm like, oh my God, I do not care about Venom. It only gets worse with the offshoots. Carnage is trash too in my book. David, what's your opinion of Venom?
Well, actually, the very first comic I ever saw and read was Amazing Spider-Man 363, I think, where you have Venom's head, Carnage's head, and Spider-Man's head, drawn by Mark Bagley. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. But upon reflection, I think you're so right. There's not a lot to the character. It's pretty basic. Maybe the Flash Thompson version was the most complex and possibly interesting. But at this time, in the early 90s, I think a lot of the character designs were driving the stories, not necessarily the characters or the plots. And I think that shows with most recent Venom comics like Venom Inc. or what was it? The Venom World? Venomized. Was it Venomized?
Yeah. No, I think Venomized is the one that's coming up.
Yeah. What was the other one? What was the one that just came out?
Venomverse.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, there it is. And that was just I read and reviewed most of that, and it was just so flat. It was just like they were trying to bring back the 90s and show you, just as you were just saying, Jason, like Captain America with a symbiote, Rocket Raccoon with a symbiote. And it's just like, okay, there's not a lot to this beyond the cool, you know, art that you can pump out of that.
Yeah, it feels like a what if, like that old series.
Can I make a confession?
What's that?
The reason why I picked up Venomverse was because I saw Rocket Raccoon was going to be involved with it.
I mean, he's funny, but it's just because he's Rocket. It's not because he has a symbiote on him. It's, I don't know, it's very odd. Obviously, Marvel's pumping out these Venom comics right now because the movie's coming out. I mean, right? They want these comics on the stands.
But it's so far in advance. Like, they just released that teaser. I think they're still probably doing principal photography, but like, In that teaser, I don't think that they even showed the symbiote or anything like that. So yeah. It seems it's like it's so far off. Really, of this year?
Yeah, of this year. I was surprised, too. I couldn't believe it.
I mean, I guess movie production schedules are probably a lot shorter now than they used to be, but that seems crazy to me.
Maybe it's going to be a smaller... It's probably not going to be as big as Spider-Man, but maybe that's how they can get turn around. But this Venomized comic that's coming out later this year, I don't know when it is, March or April. By the time that's done, it'll be in trade paperback form for the movie, probably.
Is that going to be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or is that like a Sony standalone thing?
Supposedly Spider-Man's going to be in it, and if Spider-Man is in it, and he's part of the Marvel Universe now, that kind of, by association, makes Venom part of the Marvel Universe.
See, I thought it weird that they were only going to have Peter Parker in it.
They're not going to?
They are, just him. Yeah. No mention of Spider-Man.
Oh, really?
That's the last thing that I read. I mean,
Sony's been playing it really close to the vest. Like, they don't want people to know what they're really doing with this, because I guess it's kind of a departure for superhero movies.
Well, I mean, it's clear that they're going to make him sort of an anti-hero instead of playing up any of the villainous origins of him. If he's the protagonist of the film, it's going to be hard to relate to, you know, a guy who eats brains and turns into piles of goop.
Well, Charles Manson just died, so I guess that he's out of it. It was the one fan for the brain eating.
Was he a brain eater? See, I think there's a lot of misconception about it. I don't think that Charles Manson actually himself did any of the dirty work. I think he was just crazy and convinced other people to kill for him.
You're a Charles Manson supporter. All right, got it.
No. That is inaccurate. That is not what I'm saying. I'm just reciting the... Anyway, let's move on to a different character.
If I could just say one more thing about Venom, I think you're totally right. There's not a lot to the character. I don't really understand why he's so popular, because you'd think everyone who picks up the comic and goes, oh, this looks cool, and then reads it and realizes it's not cool, they would, you know, get it through their head that maybe Venom is kind of a basic, boring character.
Yeah, Venom's a tribal tattoo. You think that it was neat a while ago, but there's no substance to it. At least that's my opinion. If you like Venom, please don't bomb our Twitters with all of your pictures of Venom. We're kind of over that concept at this point.
That's probably the best comparison I've heard all week to something.
Oh yeah.
Although there probably are a lot of Venom tattoos out there, I would say.
Oh, I guarantee there are. There was that show Ink Master where they had an episode that was just doing comic book tattoos, and I remember pretty vividly a Venom tattoo. I think it won. It was either a Venom tattoo or a tattoo of Bane that won. But yeah,
a character that's sort of similar that would be my pick for I don't understand why it's so popular is Spawn, because he also has like these tendrils of his cape, not a symbiote, like whereas Venom has the symbiote like tendrils, and he's also like this anti-hero who looks cool. The design is cool, but then you start to dig into the story, which I actually read when it was first coming out in the early 90s, and after the first few issues I realized it was just like dragging, and there really was no story there. And maybe Todd McFarlane didn't know what he was doing besides making it look cool. But, you know, we've got one movie for Spawn already. We've got a Spawn movie coming up soon. They're already casting it, I guess, was the news this week. I just don't get the character, besides the fact that he's a cool demon.
He's another one with a pretty dense and weird lore. Like, I think at one point he killed God and the devil and was basically the supreme being. He's been an angel. He's, like, led the armies of hell or whatever. Yeah,
he's ex-military. He's trying to protect his wife or something. Yeah,
I mean, if there was one thing that could have made me care about Spawn, it was probably the short-lived HBO animated series.
Oh yeah,
where he was voiced by like Keith David, and it was pretty good. But it didn't. Nothing about it really sticks with me. I just kind of remember the aesthetic. And I guess that kind of speaks to the complaint that we're having about the character, and that there's not a lot of like substance there. He's just kind of flash. He's the if we're going to keep the tattoo metaphor, he's the tramp stamp of like he's still around, he's still kicking, and it's not a good look to have. But
yeah, with Spawn, I'm in the same boat as you, Jason. As far as I got with Spawn was the animated series on HBO. Other than that, I've never really read any of the books. I know who he is, I know who, you know, what he's about, but I never got past the animated series. And to tell you the truth, I'd have to go back and even watch it again to remember anything. It was cool, but it wasn't nothing like... Like, if I walk into Best Buy today and it's on sale for, like, $10 for the whole series, that's not something I feel like I have to grab.
Yeah, I mean, for one, I have HBO Go, and I can just watch it there. But for another, like, I guess, you know what, the key figure that made me realize that I don't care about Spawn, if you remember the game series Soul Blade / Soul Edge / Soul Calibur, whatever actual series itself is called, they every game they do like a big reveal of like a secret character or like a DLC or whatever, and it's usually someone like they did like Darth Vader and Yoda a few years ago. But there was one time where they were doing system specific, console specific characters. So like if you were playing it on the GameCube, you got Link. If you were playing it on the Xbox, you got, or if you're playing it on the PlayStation, I think you got Kratos, the God of War. And if you played it on Xbox, you got Spawn. And I remember reading something in like a message board or something where someone was like super excited. I'm like, man, who gives a shit about Spawn? Why do I need to see him swinging an axe? Oh, and that's another thing. Evidently, he used an axe in it. When my man Heihachi Mishima from Tekken was in there, dude used his fists because he is a badass. He was also really hard to use in that game because he's a close range fighter. But all the same, Spawn, yeah, he definitely falls into the category of characters who I don't get. Dave, how about you? Do you got a character that's just not doing it for you? It's not ringing any bells?
Yes, I do, and it's probably a lot of listeners want to hear it and want to give a face about it and probably not agree, but I know Jason agrees with me, and my first choice is actually Superman.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot written about the issue with Superman as a relatable character. Like, he's got this great godlike power, and we're supposed to see ourselves in him, but... other people that I've seen have defended him as like this aspirational figure, like he's supposed to be, you know, supreme, and to see him struggle with godhood essentially is the interesting part of the story. I do not agree.
Yeah, and that's the thing with you saying him being godlike is he has all these powers. He doesn't even have to really fight. He could burn anybody up with the eye lasers. I mean, you have to have the enemy strong enough to fight him, you know, to make it worthwhile for him. Because it's not like he's going to fight crime every day. He can just shoot somebody with the beams and be done with it. So, Batman versus Superman, I'm like, okay, yeah. Batman has all this armor. Just shoot him in the face and blow his mouth off with the lasers and let's get the credits going and so I can leave.
Yeah, when the whole point is that it's a competitive fight because Superman refuses to actually fight him, that's not really a fight. That's, you know.
Right. And then
it sounds like Clark, you don't.
Go ahead, sorry, Dave.
It sounds like you don't like him because he's very similar to Cyclops, because basically he's got laser eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah, but
that's exactly
Cyclops' what ass. Cyclops doesn't have the super strength to go with it. I mean, if you look at it, Superman is the end all be all superhero. What can he do except touch a green rock?
And see, Cyclops, I think, falls into pretty much the other side of this argument, where he's a character that I did not give a shit about for years. I just found him really boring because he was the Duke of the X-Men of, you know, like, or the Duke from G.I. Joe of the X-Men, I guess, since we were talking about G.I. Joe before we started recording. He's just a bland, boring leader guy. And yeah, his power is kind of cool. And yeah, he's married to the hot redhead, but that wasn't enough to make me actually care. But then when he started to like kind of get like dirtier, I guess is where I'd go with it. There was that whole series of the 12, I think it was called, where he and Apocalypse bonded and then something happened. And ever since then, he took like a darker path. And that's when his affair with his psychic affair, no physicality in there, with Emma started, and what kind of led to him being a much more interesting and relatable character. Like, he embraced the flaws, and that made him someone that I could actually like read and understand. And his role in like creating X-Force, the Wolverine led version of X-Force, that was like a wet work assassination squad, made him interesting. Like, he was still the public face and still, like, you know, Johnny Goodshoes to everybody. I don't know what Johnny Goodshoes is. That's the first time I think I've ever said that. And he was a goody two-shoes, I think, is what I'm going for. But once he started to become a bad guy, I became a lot more interested in him.
So maybe Superman needs to become a bad guy.
Yeah, they've done that, though. Like, it's sort of like a trope at this point that what if Superman was bad? Like, there's so many characters that are just that. Like, Hyperion or at least the King Hyperion version of him, is just evil Superman. You've got obviously the Justice Lords, Sentry. Yeah, like they're just different versions of what if Superman was a bad guy. And it's an interesting idea, I guess. It's just, it's never been done in a way that speaks to me personally. I know that I'm going to list one of my never got into's that I think, I'm fairly certain that I remember Dave saying that he also is on the same boat with this, but the Fantastic Four is a team that I never, I can never really connect with. The only issues that I actually remember seeking out and buying featured the new quote unquote Fantastic Four, because something had happened to Reed, Sue, and you know, Johnny and Ben. But because of that, who stepped in to fill the void and figure out what happened? Why, none other than Spider-Man, Ghost Rider, the Gray Hulk, and Wolverine, who is probably the selling point for that book for me, was Wolverine. But I don't even really remember that story. I'm pretty sure Jim Lee drew that book, because I remember thinking the art was really good, but there was no real substance there, and it didn't keep me around. And it seems to be a trope that I see in a lot of Fantastic Four runs, is that eventually they get four new people in there just to give them a shot. Like, I remember there was a brief period where it was Storm and Black Panther were running the Fantastic Four. I think it might have also been Thing and Johnny at that point. But I don't know. They're bland characters to me. The best Fantastic Four story, and I say this with little hesitation, is The Incredibles. Like, it's better than the Fantastic Four ever was.
Oh, my God. Okay, I don't agree with you necessarily. I kind of agree with you, but I don't agree with you because... I think you're totally right. They tend to get boring over time, and that's because the writer has already like told their great Star Trek, their great Fantastic Four story. Like in the mid '90s, I think there was some good storytelling going on. That was when Mark Bagley was drawing it, and there has been like some Elseworlds sort of one shot tales here and there. I mean, Hickman had some good bits in there running the show, but then again over time it just gets so convoluted, or the family dynamic has to always be shaken up, so it's like the cyclical thing where like they're great, everyone's happy with each other, oh no wait, now Reed is crazy, oh no wait, now Sue has a new costume with a boob window, or no, here's Thing, he's alcoholic now, you know what I mean? Like it's like you can't have a good run last very long, because the real magic of it only lasts so long.
And I remember reading, what was it, the latest Secret Wars? Was that a couple years ago?
Yeah.
And it was like, at the end, when it just boiled down to being a Fantastic Four story, I remember being so pissed off about it. And then that extended when the Thing got thrown in with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And he just didn't fit for me at all. And it was hard reading that run with him in it.
Yeah.
Because he was going, like he was talking about, it's clobbering time, and Rocket's joking with him about the scene, and they're trying to explain
really
stuff
clunky
to him. Yeah, and then he's like trying to explain Earth stuff to them, and I'm like, this just sucks. So,
I mean, Kitty was also a member of the Guardians at that time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Kitty Pryde.
Yep.
That was a hard read, too.
She was dating Star-Lord.
Yeah, she was dating Star-Lord, and it just didn't fit either.
Remember when Thing had the mask because Wolverine cut his face? Remember that?
Was that why he had the mask? I remember him having a mask.
He thought he was extra. I mean, he already thought he was ugly, but I guess he thought he was extra ugly with three slashes across his face.
So did he heal? Can he heal? Like, or is he like, you know, just stone? Like if I were to like carve my name into his butt, would it always be there?
It's supposed to always be there, but you know, with the whole Secret Wars thing, and they keep rebooting these characters, and it doesn't matter. There's no explanation for why maybe there is for his scarred face, but I don't remember it.
Where's he at now? Because he's not with the Guardians anymore. Where'd he go?
There's a Marvel just came out with a new series called 2-in-1, which is like a classic series that they're kind of like bringing back to, I don't know, get old fans ramped up or something. But anyway, him and Human Torch are together now. And Reed Richards left them a message, and Dr. Doom isn't very happy about this, and he's tracking them down. And I think that actually that issue comes out, issue number two comes out next week. So
is Dr. Doom still like a good guy? Because wasn't he Iron Man?
Yeah, he is. Actually, in the comic, he talks to Thing, and he's like, why won't you trust me? I'm a hero now. And at the very end, spoilers, at the very end, Doom is like back to his like finger tapping, you know, with the petting the cat in the evil lair. And he's like, I'm going to get you, my pretties. You know, I just mixed so many different things just then.
Yeah, but you basically described Doc from Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, there you go.
Gadgets.
Yeah, so I think they're bringing Fantastic Four back soonish. They're on a trek to find Reed and Sue.
I thought they would have been back by now, but
see, the one interesting thing that I do see in the Fantastic Four is the Maker, like the evil version of Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe. He's the lone bit of interesting storyline that I can think of with the Fantastic Four, and yet I don't know where I could even see a story with him at this point.
He was in Ultimates 2 recently. He was actually, it was really trippy. I actually reviewed the second trade paperback of that. Anyway, he was doing this crazy stuff like manipulating this like celestials and gods and pissing off Destiny. And it was actually quite good. And it ended, I don't even know where he is now. He's hiding, I guess, still. But yeah, you're right. He's a really interesting twist on Reed Richards. Going back to your Superman point, I totally agree with you. I think he's pretty flat, although I do review Action Comics regularly, and it's all right. It's pretty good. But have you either of you read All-Star Superman by Frank Quitely?
I saw the movie version of it, I have not read the books.
That series will make you fall in love with Superman. It's just each issue kind of like focuses in on one element that made Superman great, either like crazy, weird, silly villains or his super intelligence or the time travel kind of things he would do. And it's only 12 issues, but it's got to be one of the best comics I've ever read. Well, superhero comics I've ever read. And it made me like really appreciate Superman for what he can be good at or what the stories can pull out of the character. But you're totally right. Like most of the time it's, you know, people are shooting bullets at his chest and he's smiling. Like there's not much to it.
That's the thing. Everything that he can accomplish, but his secret identity is a pair of glasses and he combs his hair.
Right. Which that All-Star Superman comic actually spoofs, and they actually kind of, they play up how he could even do that. And in the comic, actually, it's kind of clever. Instead of just putting glasses on, he actually like slumps his shoulders. He bends his knees kind of, wears baggy clothes so that it is more of a transformation. And they kind of make it believable that he could pull it off if he did that, like changed his body type in a way.
I think that kind of calls to mind the Superman speech from Kill Bill 2, where he's like, you know, when you think of the traits of Superman, he's powerful and he's strong and blah, blah, blah. But think about him as Clark Kent and what are his defining characteristics? He's like a schlub. He's not always late. He's, you know, kind of a mess. He's a talented writer, but he's not like standout like Lois is. He is Superman's commentary on humanity. That is what he thinks people are. And I think that's, again, like maybe the most interesting thing that I've ever heard about Superman.
Yeah, it's hard to, I think it's just a really hard character to write. And it's not necessarily the character's fault. It's just, you know, you need to have really good talent, pull the good stories out. Whereas other characters like Spider-Man, I think anybody can write a good Spider-Man. I mean, I don't write comics, so what am I talking about? But I think it's a lot easier to write a Spider-Man story than it is a Superman story.
Well, because Spider-Man's an everyman. Spider-Man is somebody that you can relate to. He's like the guy next door, whereas Superman is, again, like this godlike being capable of like punching a hole in the damn planet. You know, it's hard to kind of feel sympathy for any of his pain because you never feel like he's in danger. Like, there's no challenge to him. It takes ungodly, literally sometimes, characters like Darkseid, DC Thanos, or Mongol to even be comparable. I mean, I know that they powered up Wonder Woman in recent years, so they can kind of put her toe-to-toe with Superman, but it's he's in a league of his own, really. Like, which is funny because we were just talking about how there are so many different clones of him. I think it's kind of funny that Marvel has never been able to successfully recreate the Superman, I guess, caricature in their comics, considering how close a lot of the Avengers and Justice League members tend to be. Like, they both have archers, they both have, like, the transparent cape-wielding, like, psychic flying guy, like, in Vision and Martian Manhunter.
I would argue, I think Captain Marvel is going to potentially pull that off when the movie comes out. Because she has, I mean, she doesn't shoot lasers out of his eyes, like David was saying, but she can fly, she has super strength, right?
She shoots lasers out of her fists.
Does she?
Yeah.
There you go. Like, there you go. She's got the lasers too.
She's, yeah, you know what? I could throw Carol on this list too, that of characters that I've never really seen the appeal of. I guess I see the appeal.
Rogue? You're a big X-Men guy. Rogue?
I love Rogue, and she took the gifts of Carol Danvers and made me care about a character who has that. Because you know why? Because her predominant power made her vulnerable, because she couldn't touch people, and that was a very realistic part of her. And it actually was a beautiful juxtaposition to have somebody who was capable of throwing a bus at somebody and super strong and just really powerful, but she can't even like enjoy the touch of a loved one. She can't even have someone run their fingers through her hair. I remember that line pretty specifically when she's talking about, like, talking to Gambit, my favorite comic book romance, if I haven't said it before. And no, I'm not reading that series right now. Eric says it's good, so I'll give it a shot at some point. I'll do the trade. But yeah, Carol, I see the appeal in that, at least in recent years, they've been trying to reposition her as this feminist icon, like a very strong, resolute woman. She's no longer wearing like the one piece bathing suit with her butt hanging out. They're kind of getting away from all of the really shitty storylines that they did with her in the 70s and 80s, especially that one where she like gave birth to her, to the guy who like impregnated her against her will. And then she fell in love with him. She
tried to tell the Avengers that she was raped, and they were like,
"Well, like in like nah. It's just like, oh, you're gonna be pregnant? That's cool. Like, I'll be a big blue teddy bear." Like, dude, she wasn't even pregnant yesterday. That was the thing about it. Like, she just appeared pregnant one day, having not been pregnant before. But yeah,
there's a really good article on Adventures in Poor Taste called "Feminist Marvels" about the history. Part of it is about the history of Captain Marvel, and it goes into all of this and how basically Marvel's been trying to retcon it as fast as possible for this movie because they need to start selling trade paperbacks, but they don't want to sell those ones.
Jeez. Yeah. And I know that Allie was talking a bit about how she's not a fan of the current writing staff on the Carol Danvers book. And the name Captain Marvel feels a little silly. I thought that she was fine as she's had like five names too. I guess if we're going back to talking about lore, because like she was Binary and Warbird and something else.
Ms. Marvel.
Speaking of that, Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan is someone that I feel like I haven't gotten into, but I can appreciate the character. I like Kamala Khan. In the bits that I've read her in, but I've never read any of her actual individual books, or I don't read Champions, where I know she's a regular cast member. But when she does pop up, much like Miles Morales, like I appreciate their contributions to the story. They serve a function as a character, and I totally get that. Whereas Carol, the most that I've read of her, at least in recent years, was Civil War II, which made no effort to make her a human being and more rational. It was just, I mean, admittedly, Tony was way worse, but
they didn't do her any favors with that book.
No, yeah, they made her a monster. Well, not a monster, but they made her suck.
Yeah, you're so right. I was a little taken aback, actually, because they've been spending so much time trying to, like, they keep rebooting her story, or at least they keep giving her number one issues for a reason, because it's not selling, right? And then they do this big event and they kind of trash her in a way.
Yeah, she was the villain of the piece, but Anyway, I feel I personally, having read, and you can read my review on AIPTComics.com, plug, having read that trade in one go, I feel like she was probably in the right most of the time. And they had to like create this crazy web of inconsistencies to make her bad. So arguably, in my opinion, Tony was the villain of that piece. But I'll digress. Kind of touched on it a bit ago when it came to Spider-Man, but the converse of what we're discussing is characters that you weren't really into, and then there was that one thing that kind of put them on your radar and that changed your opinion of it. For me, I guess I'll go first. Iron Man was a character that I could not give a shit about. In the 80s and then in the 90s, I knew who he was. He appeared in the background of every major crossover. I knew he was supposed to be a big deal. I knew he had an alcohol problem, blah, blah, blah. But he and friggin' War Machine were just this bland bullshit that I never really wanted to. The whole Avengers team, really, but especially Iron Man. He felt like the most needless of the characters. Fast forward to the Iron Man movie with Robert Downey Jr., and holy shit, yeah, it's a revelation. This is a fun character. This is someone who I can get into. And I read... and really enjoyed that Superior Iron Man series where Tony was like switched to being evil for a little bit. And that was a really cool book. He's a character that can be handled well, just not in Civil War II.
Can I throw my characters like this?
Oh, go for it.
Extremis by Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
That was really cool too. It kind of changed him and made him more of an organic suit or something. But that was exciting. It was really. I'm with you too. I think Iron Man for the longest time was kind of boring.
Yeah, I agree with you guys with Iron Man as well. And before the movie even came out, I always said that if they made a movie of Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. would have to be Stark just because of all the past that Robert Downey Jr.'s had. I mean, you know, he was into drugs and an alcoholic. I'm like, this is the guy that should be Tony Stark. And then, of course, it got casted, and the original Iron Man is still one of my favorite Marvel movies to date.
Yeah, I don't know if I would... Yeah, it might be one of my favorites. Like, maybe, like, top five.
Yeah, the first one, not the second or the third.
Yeah. No, we were very well aware of your opinions on this Iron Man sequel. But
we have some writers who actually think Iron Man 3 is one of the best Marvel movies there is, and I don't understand that logic, because I too think that movie was bloated and the villain was bad and
it was terrible.
Yeah. But you got to see Gwyneth Paltrow in just a sports bra punching Guy Pearce in the face, and who doesn't want to see that?
I don't even remember that happened.
That's I don't amazing. Either.
Well,
I just remember spoiler that alert. Mandarin is now ruined. That's the only thing I remember.
I thought that, I mean, I guess, did we ever, I feel like we've discussed this actually on the podcast before, but did we ever reveal whether or not that short Long Live the King was canonical to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where it was revealed that, like, Trevor was not really Trevor, like, he actually was, like, some sort of, like, secret badass?
Oh, I remember that, yeah. I don't know if it's in canon. Maybe it is.
Because it was, I think it was like a DVD bonus. I don't think that it was even filmed when the movie was filmed. I think that it was filmed to kind of resuscitate the character after some bad word of mouth. But yeah, how about you guys? Are there other characters that there's the one thing that like very firm defined point that changed your opinion on them?
I already said mine actually by accident. All-Star Superman, it gave me a new impression of the character, and it really just reveled in the great classic stories that were great, and then they just kind of redid them in a really, you know, pretty package. I like Frank Quitely's art quite a bit, so I was sold on that too. But yeah, before that, I always just assumed Superman, just like David was saying, and which is pretty much true. He's too powerful, but that kind of got into the mythical and the lore of the character that's pretty insane. But that's because he's been around for so long that they've got writers from the 70s writing crazy, like, trippy stuff. And, like, what is that guy? What's that little midget? Or not midget. What is that little dwarf guy? The
Mixius Pitlick?
Mr. McPizzical or whatever his name is?
Yeah, Mr. Mixius Spitlick. At least that's how they pronounced it in the Superman cartoon, which, funny enough, I did enjoy. But
oh, yeah, that was a pretty good cartoon.
Yeah, I mostly enjoyed it when they had Batman episodes on it, though. So, like, when they would do crossovers.
Right.
But yeah, Glenn.
I was going to say, in that show, Mr. Mixius Spitlick is voiced by Gilbert Gottfried, which is perfect casting because he's supposed to be the most annoying thing in all of existence.
That's
but he like goes through a big show of explaining how to pronounce his name, and it was Mix, and he turned into a mixer. Yiz, as in a long yes. Spit, where he spit in Superman's face, and then lick, where he turned into a dog and licked his face. So that's how
do you
I always
memorize this stuff, man? That's just insane.
I just remember that bit. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Because I remember reading the name before I saw the episode. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like,
hopefully it's a Jeopardy question, and you're on there a couple of years from now.
Oh yeah, and I also know that the pronunciation of it backwards is Kiltipsy Zim. So,
geez, right there, it's right in the front of your brain. You have it.
Oh so, yeah. Sure. Yeah, and yet I can't do calculus. But yeah, you know. I think that TV and movies it does a good job of resuscitating a boring or an idea that maybe we just don't give a lot of credence to. Another example that I was going to mention was Flash. I conceptually get the interest in the Flash. It seemed like not very interesting to me because the whole gimmick is just that he's the fastest man alive and he's always still somehow late. It feels like if he's really faster than the speed of light, who the fuck is challenging him? Yeah, like it literally has to be the Reverse Flash or Professor Zoom or whatever you want to call him. It makes no sense that fucking Captain Cold, just because he's got a freeze gun, is somehow a challenge to this guy who can.
Or Gorilla Grodd.
Yeah, like how is that any of this a challenge? He's faster than friggin' light.
Mm.
But on the show, and maybe it's because of my own proclivities and enjoyment of like teeny soap opera-y TV shows. Grant Gustin does a good job of making him like relatable and understanding like the burden of his powers. And I don't think I knew like the backstory of his dad being accused of killing his mom. I don't know if that's canon in the DC universe, actually.
They redid that story. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought, again, for a show that has such bad special effects, it made me care about the character and a lot of the other little side characters there, except Vibe. I'm never going to be into Vibe. But
David, were you going to mention Captain America?
Yes, I was. I was going to say we were talking about things that happened to convert you over to like superheroes, and Nick Spencer did it for me with Captain America to the
same
point. Yeah, so I'm even reading the new series now, even though Nick Spencer isn't doing it anymore. But I remember when that first issue came out and he said, "Hail Hydra," I was like, no way. And I ran out the next day and picked up the copy. And I think Nick Spencer did such a good job with that arc, with the whole series. So now because of that, I now like Captain America more than I originally did, to the point, like I said, I'm even buying the new series now.
Which is completely different, right? Because he's like all-American. He's back to his roots of being the all-American Boy Scout.
Right.
Roaming the country, saving people's days as they, you know, go to breakfast at a diner.
Right. But it's not bad. It's not bad, though.
No, it's Chris Samnee is amazing. He's such a good artist. Yeah, I really enjoyed the new series, too. Yeah, I think Nick Spencer did a really good job with like the psychological thriller element and how he was getting into Captain America's head. You know, everyone hates this Hydra thing, but I think the build-up to Secret Empire was actually quite good. And if you had read all the Captain America comics that came before it, you probably would have appreciated the event more.
Right. And that's the point of this, is everybody will say, well, that book isn't good, that book isn't this. But there was so emotion that people were pissed about what was going on with Captain America that I think they overlooked the fact that, hey, you're bitching about these books that don't make you feel anything. You finally have one that does, but you're projecting the message all wrong because you're pissed off about it. You won't let the story play out and see what happens. Because we all knew, and we've said this time and time again, he wasn't going to stay Hydra. Mm-hmm. Just let the story play out.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I've definitely defended that storyline as recently as last night, as a matter of fact. I really do think that people were so taken aback by this concept that Captain America could be the villain. But like, why, dude? It's fiction. It's not a real character, and it's not like this is going to wrap and Steve is still going to be a villain, even though there is still Hydra Cap out there. They literally have a walking Deus Ex Machina in Kobik that can just snap it right back to the original way. It's comics. There's a million ways that you can have people do heel and face turns. Like, it seemed silly that people got so up in arms about this storyline, which I thought was done pretty well personally. But I was going to say, I too was not on the Cap train until the movies. But if there's a comic arc that got me into him on the page, it was probably the Winter Soldier arc. It was really well done, and there was a lot of like great art on that. I forget who was drawing at that point, but it was very painterly and dark, and it was a captivating story. And I really also liked, it was a cool idea. I was also on the train of don't bring back Bucky. That's a terrible idea, but I think that they did it right. Now Bucky is a much more interesting character. I do enjoy him as the Winter Soldier. I don't know that I see him carrying a book, frankly. And his version of the Thunderbolts was certainly the worst version of the Thunderbolts. But I think that they did a lot of good work in that, and it made for a great movie. The Winter Soldier is probably my favorite Marvel movie.
Good one.
Yeah, and I think that owes to the kind of you mentioned spy like thrillers. Like, I think that it was a political thriller, and so was the arc that introduced him. And I think that that's where the strength of Captain America really lies.
Do you remember when characters would die and the news would report on it, like Superman and Captain America?
Yeah, Superman was a big deal when that comic came out with the armband and everything.
And then they had the lightning Superman. Ugh, God.
Oh, the blue and red Superman.
Yes, so bad.
Yeah, that was a great, great day for comic fans. DC was so full of good ideas in the 90s.
And they're still, Warner Brothers just got, they just keep putting out good ideas with their films. Probably the best superhero movies out there, right?
Yeah. That's the weird side of it, because Marvel's books, I feel like, lately have been really bad. But their movies are kicking ass, whereas DC's books have been very good, and their movies have been shit. Like, nobody can get it right all the way. Well,
I don't agree with that statement at all. No, just
defend
kidding.
Yourself here, man. I feel like that was not contentious in the light.
I do think that there are good Marvel comics, and there are good DC comics. I think that I still can't pinpoint why they're so different. I feel like, with Marvel, even if you get a bad comic, it felt like it was more important than a random Aquaman issue.
Anything's more important than a random fucking Aquaman issue.
Yeah,
newspaper that was waiting for me in my driveway that could deliver once a week is more important than a damn Aquaman.
Yeah, that was a pretty specious metaphor. That's like saying, oh, no, you know, I feel like this filet mignon might be better than the Totino's pizza roll.
Flash, like you were saying, like the character is kind of, I don't know, he's too powerful or something.
That's definitely something I felt about DC. Like, there's a ton of web series that do this, but there's the one that I'm thinking of, the show Death Battle on YouTube, where they take two characters of somewhat similar stature and then pit them against each other in this theoretical fight, and they kind of base it off of feats that they've accomplished in the past and try and maintain some level of like scientific reasoning for what they're doing. And what it really comes down to every time is that the worst written character is going to win because they're given a million friggin' times the strength. Like, I think it was, they did like Kirby versus Sonic the Hedgehog, and Kirby destroyed him because like they showed that in like certain video games or like comic books that they've done of Kirby, he like threw a frying pan to the moon and back, which showed that he could lift X many quintillion tons of force that he was capable of creating. And then there was like other things where he like on his star, he's able to like run, like fly at the speed of light. Like, of course, he's just badly written. That's why he won. It doesn't make him a better character. And that's, I think, what we're kind of talking about here is that if you make someone unrelatable because they're so powerful, which, let's be real, the DC characters, at least like the main pantheon of heroes, kind of are, it's just hard to get into them.
Even Batman has, in the last 10 years, he's become this incredible tactician where he literally can think of any way that this battle will go, and he always has the ship or the gadget or gizmo or whatever that he needs to win the day. Like, I think Scott Snyder has been doing that quite a bit, and I think Tom King is trying to pull that back, but he's just been impossible, like super powerful as far as planning is concerned, and that's just not fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's not new, though. Like, I happen to remember a very special Batman story in which he was able to repel a shark with a spray from his belt.
You want to know what's funny, Jason? I was sitting here waiting. I'm like, if Jason doesn't bring it up, I'm going to.
Well, you know, as they say, sometimes you just can't get rid of a bomb.
That's not even close to how he's been recently, though. Having shark repellent because he's in water is one thing.
He wasn't like, in water. He was not in water. He just ended up in water.
Doesn't matter. It's a shark. But now he's got like he's like communicating with freaking Sandman or whatever, and like he already knew who he was. He knows who like these Vertigo characters are that have never even come into the universe, but somehow Batman knows. Batman even went back in time to the caveman days and like met like supernatural people. It's just ridiculous. It's like I don't know, man. I just can't deal.
I mean, I
can just sit here and listen to you guys, because lately, I want to say probably the past year or so, I'm more of an independent comic reader. I like Image and Dynamite and all like all of those. So, of course, I have my favorites in DC and Marvel that I've been reading, but I'm slowly trying to get back into reading more DC and Marvel characters. One, just so I can keep up with you guys, but two, because I think I'd like to get back into reading some of the ones I used to read when I was younger. But I'm kind of funny because I don't like jumping in the middle of a book. You know, I like starting.
I don't think that's odd at all.
Do what?
I don't think that's odd at all. I think most people are like that. That's why they constantly are doing new number one issues, because that's a jump on point for new readers.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but I'm gonna jump into a few newer ones here soon. So we'll see how it goes. Not Aquaman though. Fuck that.
What if it was a really good Aquaman arc, though?
But that's the thing. I'm a huge fan of Abnett, and not even his writing can make me pick up a comic book of Aquaman. Mm. I liked what he did with the Guardians a few years ago, but I can't do Aquaman. Just can't.
I actually got to interview Dan Abnett about Aquaman a couple of months ago, and at the time I was reviewing every issue. And he tried to bring in these like Atlantis characters, like these supporting characters, and they weren't even that interesting. I don't know, it was hard to get into it. When he met Obama, I was like, I'm done. He was gonna attack Obama. Aquaman was going to kill Obama. He was in the Oval Office, and then Superman shows up and he goes, can we talk this out? And they're like, and then they talk it out. And because
Superman could have just burned him with his eye lasers, does it?
He could have, his two Cyclops eyes. no, but at that point I was like, Jesus, what is this comic? I don't know.
Well, when we start talking about Obama being murdered by Aquaman, that's a good enough segue as any to move on to Dave and I's favorite segment of the show, because we don't have to talk during it. Adventures in Pod Tastes, very special Defend Your Poor Taste segment, where we ask our guests to talk about a guilty pleasure that they might have that they're not so guilty about, whether it be a book, a game, a concept. If you really like olives, I guess we could talk about that. So, David, you're actually, I think, maybe our first repeat on this. Maybe Jim has had to do it a couple of times as well.
I've actually, this is my third time. This is my third time.
Yeah, this is third. Chris has done it twice.
Chris has also done it twice. Well, yes. we are just circling the drain on these guests. As we just keep the same guys.
I'm the guest that's circling the drain. That's nice. I like that.
Yeah, that's the message we're sending here.
I'm in the toilet.
there's your title next time when Jason starts stumbling over what we're going to refer you to as when we introduce you.
Yeah. And now the drain circler in chief, David Brook. Well, David, since you know the spiel at this point, what's the poor taste you're going to defend this time?
I think it's a movie that I recently rewatched, and I grew up. I think it was a 1993 film. Just picture it, Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? There's a kid, the little kid who loves him. He's his favorite action star, last action hero. Such a good movie. It is a 38% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a shame. It's a crime, I would say. So that movie is hilarious. It's funny. It's nonstop. It breaks the fourth wall in clever ways. There's a lot of inventive things in it. I mean, I'm sure it was made for teenage kids, but, you know, there's a lot of joy in that movie, and you don't get that with movies these days. It's not as fun as that.
See, I'm fairly certain that we've talked about The Last Action Hero on this podcast before, but I do appreciate that movie. I had a good time with it. I think that the thing that people expected it to be an actual action movie and not like a sort of satire or spoof that it ended up being. Because it's supposed to be play on all the tropes, and like there's the silly jokes about everybody's phone number being the same, and like it's all sexy women that work at that Blockbuster, and like the Stallone as the Terminator bit, and like the animated cat cop. There's a lot to like about that movie. I think Charles Dance did a pretty good job as the bad guy with like the glass eye, and if you keep an eye out, pun retroactively intended, you'll notice that Sir Ian McKellen, Magneto himself, plays the Grim Reaper in that movie.
Yep.
But y'all are leaving out the best part of the film.
What's that?
The soundtrack.
Oh, the AC/DC soundtrack.
Alice in Chains, Megadeth, Anthrax, Cypress Hill, Fishbone. That's a good soundtrack.
People forget.
Do you have the CD on your like desk right now? Like, how are you to rattle that off? I mean,
because I own it, and I couldn't tell you how many times I've played it in my life. It's a damn good CD.
And it was written by a damn good writer, Shane Black, who's done Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and The Nice Guys.
He arguably wrote Predator.
The Last Boy Scout. He's making the new Predator.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy's talented. He basically, didn't he like personally bring Robert Downey Jr. back from the brink with a couple
of films? Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is an exceptional film. That was a really fun film.
That was the last
decent thing Val Kilmer did in a while.
I was going to say pretty much that exact same bit. Although, now that I thought about it, I did like Val Kilmer in MacGruber for all of the faults that movie had. I thought he was fun in it.
He was the villain, right?
Yeah, he was the villain.
Yeah,
Shane Black did also do Iron Man 3, so I don't know how we feel about that.
I mean, I'm not Dave. I like
that. Hurts.
He did do Lethal Weapon, though. Who doesn't like Lethal Weapon?
It's a Christmas movie.
It is.
Lethal Weapon isn't a Christmas movie.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, they're all set during Christmas.
How's it not? If Die Hard is.
No, actually, Die Hard. Christmas is integral to the theme. I do not remember any Christmassy bits in Lethal Weapon.
He's snorting the cocaine at the Christmas tree lot.
At the Christmas tree lot?
Yeah.
Dude, Shane Black makes all of his movies around Christmas. You didn't know this?
You don't remember the first introduction to Mel Gibson's when he's at the Christmas tree lot trying to buy the coke off those three guys? And it turns out,
I guess I don't remember this movie as well as I maybe remember other movies.
And then at the end, Gary,
you were starting to talk about like doing like coke in Christmas. I was like, yeah, Ellis doing cocaine in the office. I remember that. But no, I don't remember Lethal Weapon that well, I guess.
It's a Christmas movie.
Man, Is the TV series version of it on Christmas as well?
I won't touch that shit. I'm surprised they got renewed for another season.
Those trailers look awful.
Bad.
Yeah, what is Damon Wayans doing with himself?
Yeah, who knows?
But the one bit that I always remember the most about Last Action Hero, among the many things that I do remember about it, actually, was two bits of like failed technology that were in it. One, he had a mini disc player in his fucking car. If you remember, people trying to make mini discs a thing, mm-hmm. Where I think you could only put a single song on a fucking disc, so wow. It was completely useless as a product, especially because CDs existed at that point. I don't think that the sound quality was like significantly different, at least for like a car speaker. So it made no sense, except that I think Sony co-produced this movie. But the other wasn't technically in the movie, but was on the Burger King collector cups that were sold alongside The Last Action Hero. It had like this little animation to it. It was a plastic sheath that went around your cup, and you had to get like the super large cup in order to do it. And like when you twisted that. It like made Arnold move or like an explosion happen or something like that. It was a really cool thing that I've never seen them do again.
Huh. I don't remember that.
I do remember it. That's crazy that you brought that up.
Yeah, I'm looking that thing up. I'm going to eBay some of those cups now if they still exist.
I'll send them out to everybody on the AIPT staff.
Oh yeah, that's this year's Christmas present. It's going to be that. we're setting it in place. Everybody who doesn't listen to the podcast on staff is going to be really surprised.
I found the Burger King commercial for that, by the way. I'll send it to you. Oh,
yeah, hell yeah. When we start talking about the staff, that makes just as good enough a segue to start talking about our picks of the week, where we talk about the comics, the movies, the TV shows, the games, whatever it is that's got our ears and eyes this week. Dave, why don't you go first? Let us know what you're reading, what you're playing, what you're watching.
What I read this week is I got Volume 7 of Punisher Max, which this came out at a time where I wasn't reading comics, so for me to get my hands on this, I read it all in one day. It's like over 500 pages. It's written by Jason Aaron, and the artwork is by the late, great Steve Dillon. And it's all about the rise and fall of the Kingpin. And it's just a really good Punisher story that I never had a chance to go back and read. I'm still playing PUBG. I'm hooked to PUBG. I think, David, you're playing it too still, right?
It's the only game I'm playing, even though I have like three games I got for Christmas that I barely touched.
Have you won one yet, solo?
No, I never play solo. I always play duos.
I'm the only one to play solo. I want to try and win it. I've won once this week. I've come in second and third place like three or four times, so I'm close.
That's really good. I was just reading some guy played 150 hours before he ever won one round in solo.
Oh, really? I won 2 weeks after it came out, so yeah.
How many hours you got in the game?
I'd have to look, because I did install it for a week until they fix it with all the updates, so
yeah, I remember you getting pretty miffed at the game. You even tried its non-union Mexican equivalent, Battlefield, to try and sate the urge to shoot a Fortnite, right, to shoot some other people in the face.
Yeah, I had a big problem when I threw a grenade right at somebody and I take off running across the house. It blows up and it kills me, and the cat that I threw the grenade at just comes over and loots my body. I'm like, how the hell did you not die? This is fucking bullshit. And I uninstalled it. I was that mad that just happened. So, and watching, I have been watching, I got my hands on a couple series. Tales from the Crypt from HBO. So nice. I'm revisiting all those. And then an old 80s cartoon called Cops. So I've been
watching COPS.
Those. Yep.
What I like is that it's called Cops and it's an acronym, and it's like covert operations for police science or something like that. Like it's just fucking cops. Just call them cops.
Right. But all their names cool are like cool as shit. Like the woman, her name is Misdemeanor.
And oh my god.
Like the gangster type guy called Buttons McBoom Boom. I It's quality stuff.
It's amazing.
See, they tell me they have a female character named Miranda Wrights.
No, ooh, but that's that not bad. We got like what Nightshade and Bulletproof, Long Arm. The guy with the robotic dog is called Bowser. So, and then Big Boss has like that old gangster. Yeah, hey, you know.
No, he's like G. Robinson, Chief Wiggum.
Yeah, that's funny. So, and I have Blade Runner 2049, but I just need to sit down and watch it. I didn't realize it was like 3 hours long.
Yeah, it's long, but I don't know. It is a really good movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
What about you, Jason?
For me, I'm currently, I just read the upcoming issue out today, if you're listening to this on the day that we launch, of Wildstorm, and I really enjoyed it. Still continues to be a kind of loopy book. And this issue is a little data heavy, but it also finally gives one of my favorite characters from Wildcats some love. So it's good to see Zealot back and doing some stuff and being an important part of the character. Because she's been around, but has just kind of been like appearing in vignettes. And in this issue, she kind of tips her hat as somebody who's pretty integral to the storyline, which is cool because she was one of my favorites. I don't think that they're actually going to have an analog for Warblade, so I'm going to have to accept that he's not going to be in the series. But Zealot is a good bit to see that she's doing well. Playing, I am now in the trophy stage of Uncharted 4. I beat it last weekend, and now I'm just trying to clean up, get the last few treasures I missed. So I've been driving around this friggin' desert for, like, it feels like hours because I'm trying to knock over these fucking rocks in order to get a trophy. But beyond that, I also have Telltale Batman burning a hole in my hard drive, and I'm really looking forward to getting into that. And watching, I finally started Runaways, and it's actually a pretty good show. I really, it does have a bit of the CW vibe to it. It's a little drama-y, but I knew that that was going to be the case going in, so I'm not like disappointed like some of the other writers on the site seem to be with the way that it's shaping up. I don't know. I've enjoyed the series pretty much so far. I'm about 4 episodes in, and it's one of those shows that I'm watching with my girlfriend, so I'm not allowed to watch it when she's not around, and it kind of kills me because I'm like, I just want to see what happens next. But I don't know. David, how about you? What you reading, what you watching, what you playing?
Right now, obviously, PUBG, still just playing that. Yeah, that might just go on forever because it's just so addictive. High risk, high reward kind of game. Reading, Doomsday Clock is out today, the third issue. It's been exciting, different. I'm on the fence on whether or not it's going to be a success or not, even though we're only into the first two issues. But it's definitely interesting to see how they're looping Batman into the Watchmen universe. I don't know. It's crazy.
Is Owlman still around, too? Is he that level of redundant?
No. Owlman is not. Although they are in his little ship there. They're flying around in that. Ozymandias is back. Rorschach is, but it's not really Rorschach. I don't know.
I saw that's a new guy.
Yeah. It's so early. I don't even really... In the second issue, they explain how they merge the universes. And now it's like this, I don't know, arms race to, I don't know, stop Lex Luthor from doing something bad. I don't know what's going on. They're trying to get Dr. Manhattan back. I don't know. I'm also reading this interesting first-second book, which is coming out in 2 weeks, called Is This Guy For Real? The Unbelievable Andy Kaufman. It's written and drawn by this guy named Box Brown, who did the Andre the Giant Life and Legend graphic novel that won a lot of awards.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah. That's a really good book.
Yeah, so I'm psyched because I know he's such a good storyteller, and I'm a big I'm really into comedians and reading about the history of things and the back scene stuff with Late Night. So I'm kind of curious to see how he digs into this. And then I've been watching X-Files. First, the new season just started. I think 2-3 weeks ago, so we're on episode 4 this week, and it's been pretty good. They're getting back to the basics of
the dynamic of the characters and having a comedic angle, even though they might be attacked by an alien around the corner. So yeah, that's me.
Neat. I've heard not great things about the new season of the X-Files, actually.
Yeah, the first episode was pretty bad, and now they're getting back into like the Monster of the Week episodes, so it's it's able to be entertaining even if the universe is convoluted with ridiculous agents left and right.
Well, I thought I also read that like Julian Anderson and David Duchovny have said like, this is it, we're done after this.
I know she has. I didn't know he did. Yeah, she said basically, I was told this was all we're ever going to do. And as if I'm doing what they asked and I'm not doing anything else with this, even if you want me to.
Yeah. Well, okay. With all of that recorded and in the books, it's about time we put a bow on this episode of Adventures in Pod Taste, the AIPT Comics podcast. I want to thank our guest, the what do we call you? The Circler of the Drain, David Brook. Mm-hmm. David, how can our listeners find you online?
I'm on Twitter. The handle is No Socialize.
Very cool. And I would love to thank my lovely co-host, Dave. Say hi, Dave.
Yes, hello again, everybody.
And how can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Psychotic, and that's spelled S-Y-C-O-T-I-C.
And I'm Jason. I'm more active on Instagram, but I'm also on Twitter, and they're both the same. It's Felix Lancaster, spelled the way you think it is. Yeah, that way. Want to thank you guys for listening, for making it this far. Hi, Nikki. Thanks for making it this far into the episode again. And we will see you next time on Adventures in Pod Taste. Goodbye, everybody.
Good night, Japan.